Well, I'm happy to announce that internet advertising has been abolished. It is June 8th, 2023. That's June 8th, 2023, 1450 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green with you again today. For today, we have a song. Before we get to our study, we have a song from 1975. It was a number one hit in Canada and in the U.S. Back in 1975, it was top singles in Canada, number one. Adult Contemporary, number one in Canada, both of those. And only in Canada and the U.S. was it number one. And it was U.S. Billboard Easy Listening, number one in the U.S., but also number two on the U.S. Cashbox Top 100 in the U.S. And on the Billboard Hot 100 in the U.S., it was number three. So this is a big song by Michael Martin Murphy. This is the original recording as it was played back then. It's the one I listened to when I heard it on the radio. But this is a much higher quality recording. I mean, copy. You know, it's a higher quality, closer to the source. So we're hearing the same recording, but we're hearing it much more clearly, it having been digitized more directly from the original copy, right? From the original master. It's closer to the original master than the version, than the copy that we heard over the internet, which was possibly played on vinyl, which was lacking in a lot of frequencies and a lot of sound quality that you get on digital media today. So this is really a much superior copy to the same exact song that I heard. Same recording that I heard in 1975. I do believe that. And this is it. It's called, and we've got the words here on the left, it's called Wildfire.
I planted, But there came an early snow. Been a hoot owl howling by my window now. 6 nights in a row. She's coming for me, I know. And on a wildfire, a boat's gonna go. We'll be riding wildfire. We'll be riding wildfire. We'll be riding wildfire. On a wildfire, we're gonna ride her. We're gonna leave.
Well, if you watched yesterday's video, we had the Elton John song yesterday, but I'm thinking about the part at the end of the video where we talked about, in part of that video at the end, we talked about the program UTM and running XP on Apple Silicon, which I just achieved recently for myself. I just hadn't had time until recently to even attempt it. But if you watch that video, when I'm looking at it, the Windows XP was all done in reversed photo, in reverse color. So it was all inverted color, which looked like a photo negative. So I was looking at it and having trouble seeing it because it was a photo negative, whereas what you saw on the final produced video was not negative. I had reversed it in DaVinci using four different video tracks. It took four video tracks to achieve that, because I had to, first of all, reverse the portion of the video wherever this negative image appeared. I had to reverse that whole video track and superimpose that upon the normal video, which was also, it had to be inverted. So I record all of it in negative, first of all. It's all in negative. Then I invert the whole track. So that was the bass track. Then on top of that, I superimposed a double negative, in other words, which was reversed twice so that the Windows XP could be seen in the proper light. So that's what you see with the white background in Windows XP and all that. It looks normal. That's what I didn't see that myself. That's what I didn't see when I was doing the video. But having reversed that, then my face was also negative on that superimposed track. So that's two tracks. Then I had to superimpose a third track where I cropped my face and reversed again, so that the face looks correct again, my face, that is, superimposed. So then that worked, except the problem with that was it whited out everything around my face on that superimposed track, so I couldn't see through that to the tracks below. So I had to put a fourth track on top of that, and I can't even remember what that fourth track was, but it solved the problem of the whited out background. What was that fourth track? I have no idea. I can't remember, but I saved it in case I want to look at it again. But I mean, the thing is, when you're doing these things, you with DaVinci, adding layers and using cropping, you can do a lot of things, but ingenuity is required too. You have to, but it's not planned in advance. I didn't know I didn't know that I was going to do that at all. I just did it. So anyway, I just figured it out one step at a time. I just went from step one, step two, step three. As I realized I had a new problem, I just attempted to solve it. So anyway, it's not good, as King Hezekiah learned, it's not good to reveal everything to your enemies. So since probably some of my enemies are listening, if I do have enemies, which very likely I do, since Jesus had very many of them also, it's better not to reveal everything to your enemies, right? I mean, that's what Hezekiah learned. And because, because in his case, he did reveal everything to a visiting, and it's not just to your enemies either. If you reveal everything to anybody, that information can spread and it can be received by your enemies, right? So when Hezekiah revealed everything to somebody, it doesn't matter who, it then became possible and it became prophesied or determined by Jehovah that this in fact would happen, that Jerusalem would be ultimately destroyed, but also that the Babylonian captivity, which came later, would be a manifestation of the, you know, the demise of Jerusalem. This was a thing that was, and that was connected very closely with the destruction of Jerusalem in 587 BCE, right? But the captivity occurred 10 years before the destruction. But these things were determined by Hezekiah being unwise and showing everything. Our study for today from Wild Road is very short. It's quoting from Ecclesiastes 5. That's Ecclesiastes 5 on taking care with words. From verse 2, do not be quick with your mouth. Do not be hasty in your heart to utter anything before God. God is in heaven, and you are on earth. So let your words be few. As a dream comes when there are many cares, so the speech of a fool when there are many words. When you make a vow to God, do not delay in fulfilling it. He has no pleasure in fools. Fulfill your vow. It is better not to vow than to make a vow and not fulfill it. Do not let your mouth lead you into sin, and do not protest to the temple messenger, quote, my vow was a mistake, end quote. Why should God be angry at what you say and destroy the work of your hands? Much dreaming and many words are meaningless. Therefore, stand in awe of God. That was Ecclesiastes 5, verses 2 to 7. New International Version, 1984. That's all for the study from Wild Road for today. And our proverb for today is Ecclesiastes 8 and 8. Just as no man has power over the spirit or can restrain the spirit, so no one has power over the day of death. Just as no one is discharged during a war, so wickedness will not allow those who practice it to escape. That's from the study Bible, isn't it? That's right. The reference Bible says there is no man having power over the spirit to restrain the spirit. Neither is there any power of control in the day of death, nor is there any discharge in the war. And wickedness will provide no escape for those indulging in it. you can determine which of those two translations seems to suit the moment better than the other in this particular moment in which we are now residing. Leviticus chapter 8, little children, and Jehovah proceeded to speak to Moses, saying, take Aaron and his sons with him, and the garments, and the anointing oil, and the bull of the sin offering, and the two rams, and the basket of unfermented cakes, and make all the assembly congregate at the entrance of the tent of meeting. Then Moses did just as Jehovah had commanded him, and the assembly congregated at the entrance of the tent of meeting. Moses now said to the assembly, this is the thing that Jehovah has given command to do. So Moses brought Aaron and his sons near and washed them with water. After that, he put the robe upon him and girded him with the sash and clothed him with the sleeveless coat and put the ephod upon him and girded him with the girdle of the ephod and bound it closely to him with it. Next, he placed the breastpiece upon him. So it sounds like he's binding the ephod closely with the girdle of the ephod, then placing the breastpiece upon him, and put in the breastpiece the Urim and the Thummim. These are the things for determining the lot before Jehovah. Then he placed the turban upon his head and placed upon the turban at the forefront of it the shining plate of gold, the holy sign of dedication. We know that says holiness belongs to Jehovah, just as Jehovah had commanded Moses. Moses now took the anointing oil and anointed the tabernacle and all that was in it and sanctified them. After that, he spattered some of it seven times upon the altar and anointed the altar. That's the altar of burnt offering and all its utensils in the basin and its stand so as to sanctify them. Finally, he poured some of the anointing oil upon Aaron's head and anointed him so as to sanctify him. Moses then brought Aaron's sons near and clothed them with robes and girded them with sashes and wrapped the headgear upon them just as Jehovah had commanded Moses. Then he led up the bull of the sin offering and Aaron and his sons laid their hands upon the head of the bull of the sin offering. So he's anointed the altar and poured some of the anointing oil upon Aaron's head to sanctify him. And then he brought Aaron's sons near and clothed them with their robes and girded them with sashes, wrapped the headgear upon them. Then he led the bull of the sin offering up, and Aaron and his sons laid their hands upon the head of the bull of the sin offering, and Moses proceeded to slaughter it, and take the blood and put it with his finger upon the horns of the altar round about. That's the blood of the bull of the sin offering. And purify the altar from sin with the blood. But the rest of the blood he poured at the base of the altar, that he might sanctify it to make atonement upon it. So he further sanctified it, the altar of burnt offering, by pouring the blood out at the base. After that, he took all the fat that was upon the intestines and the appendage of the liver, and the two kidneys in their fat, and Moses made them smoke upon the altar. And he had the bull and its skin and its flesh and its dung burned with fire outside the camp, just as Jehovah had commanded Moses. He now brought the ram of the burnt offering near, and Aaron and his sons then laid their hands upon the head of the ram. This is the ram of the burnt offering. After that, Moses slaughtered it, after Aaron and his sons laid their hands upon its head. And Moses sprinkled the blood round about upon the altar, and he cut up the ram into its pieces. And Moses proceeded to make the head and the pieces and the suet smoke, and the intestines and the shanks he washed with water. And Moses then made the entire ram smoke upon the altar. It was a burnt offering for a restful odor. It was an offering made by fire to Jehovah, just as Jehovah had commanded Moses. Then he brought the second ram, the ram of the installation, near, and Aaron and his sons laid their hands upon the ram's head. This is the second ram, the ram of installation. After that, Moses slaughtered it and took some of its blood and put it upon the lobe of Aaron's right ear and upon the thumb of his right hand and upon the big toe of his right foot. Next, Moses brought Aaron's sons near and put some of the blood upon the lobe of their right ear and upon the thumb of their right hand and upon the big toe of their right foot. But Moses sprinkled the rest of the blood round about upon the altar. Then he took the fat and the fat tail and all the fat that was upon the intestines and the appendage of the liver and the two kidneys and their fat and the right leg. And out of the basket of unfermented cakes that was before Jehovah, he took one unfermented ring-shaped cake and one ring-shaped cake of oiled bread and one wafer. He then placed them upon the fatty pieces and the right leg. After that, he put all of them upon the palms of Aaron and the palms of his sons and began to wave them to and fro as a wave offering before Jehovah. Then Moses took them off their palms and made them smoke upon the altar on top of the burnt offering. They were an installation sacrifice for a restful odor. It was an offering made by fire to Jehovah. And Moses proceeded to take the breast and to wave it to and fro as a wave offering before Jehovah. From the installation ram, it became the portion for Moses, just as Jehovah had commanded Moses. After that, Moses took some of the anointing oil and some of the blood that was upon the altar and spattered it upon Aaron and his garments and upon his sons and the garments of his sons with him. Thus he sanctified Aaron and his garments and his sons and the garments of his sons with him. Then Moses said to Aaron and his sons, boil the flesh at the entrance of the tent of meeting, and there is where you will eat it and the bread that is in the installation basket. Just as I was given the command, saying, Aaron and his sons will eat it, and what is left over of the flesh and the bread you will burn with fire. And you must not go out from the entrance of the tent of meeting for 7 days until the day of fulfilling the days of your installation, because it will take 7 days to fill your hand with power. Just as it has been done this day, Jehovah has commanded to be done, so as to make atonement for you. And you will stay at the entrance of the tent of meeting day and night for 7 days, and you must keep the obligatory watch of Jehovah, that you may not die, for so I have been commanded. And Aaron and his sons proceeded to do all the things that Jehovah had commanded by means of Moses. That was Leviticus chapter 8. We're now done that. And keep in mind that we will be able to understand these things later. A little bit better than we understand them now, at least, perhaps a lot better, as we review them later or as we refer to them or some other scriptures refer to them. And as we read them again, of course. Mark chapter 8, little children. This is about Jesus again, his ministry. In those days, when there was again a big crowd and they had nothing to eat, he summoned the disciples and said to them, I feel pity for the crowd because it is already 3 days that they have remained near me and they have nothing to eat. And if I should send them off to their homes fasting, they will give out on the road. Indeed, some of them are from far away. But his disciples answered him, from where will anybody here in an isolated place be able to satisfy these people with loaves? Still, he went on to ask them, how many loaves have you? They said, seven. And he instructed the crowd to recline on the ground, and he took the seven loaves, gave thanks, broke them, and began to give them to his disciples to serve, and they served them to the crowd. They also had a few little fishes, and having blessed these, he told them also to serve these. Accordingly, they ate and were satisfied, and they took up surpluses of fragments, seven provision baskets full, yet there were about 4,000 men. Finally, he sent them away. And immediately he boarded the boat with his disciples and came into the parts of Dalmanutha. Here the Pharisees came out and started disputing with him, seeking from him a sign from heaven to put him to the test. So he groaned deeply with his spirit and said, why does this generation seek a sign? Truly, I say, no sign will be given to this generation. With that, he left them, got aboard again, and went off to the opposite shore. As it was, they forgot to take loaves along. And except for one loaf, they had nothing with them in the boat. And he began to order them expressly and say, keep your eyes open. Look out for the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod. So they went arguing with one another over the fact that they had no loaves. Noting this, he said to them, why do you argue over you having no loaves? Do you not yet perceive and get the meaning? Do you have your hearts dull of understanding? Though having eyes, do you see? And though having ears, do you not hear? Though having eyes, do you not see? And though having ears, do you not hear? And do you not remember when I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000 men, how many baskets full of fragments you took up? They said to him, 12. When I broke the 7 for the 4,000 men, how many provision baskets full of fragments did you take up? And they said to him, 7. With that he said to them, do you not yet get the meaning? Now they put in at Bethsaida. Here people brought him a blind man, and they entreated him to touch him. And he took the blind man by the hand, brought him outside the village, and having spit upon his eyes, he laid his hands upon him and began to ask him, do you see anything? And the man looked up and began saying, I see men because I observe what seem to be trees, but they are walking about. Then he laid his hands again upon the man's eyes, and the man saw clearly, and he was restored. And he was seeing everything distinctly. So he sent him off home, saying, but do not enter into the village. Jesus and his disciples now left for the villages of Caesarea Philippi. And on the way he began questioning his disciples, saying to them, who are men saying that I am? They said to him, John the Baptist, and others Elijah, still others one of the prophets. And he put the question to them, you though, who do you say I am? In answer, Peter said to him, you are the Christ. Or maybe he said, you are the Christ. At that, he strictly charged them not to tell anyone about him. Also, he started teaching them that the Son of Man must undergo many sufferings and be rejected by the older men and the chief priests and the scribes and be killed and rise 3 days later. Indeed, without spokenness, he was making that statement. But Peter took him aside and started rebuking him. He turned, looked at his disciples and rebuked Peter and said, get behind me, Satan, because you think not God's thoughts, but those of men. He now called the crowd to him with his disciples and said to them, if anyone wants to come after me, let him disown himself and pick up his torture stake and follow me continually. For whoever wants to save his soul will lose it, but whoever loses his soul for the sake of me and the good news will save it. Really, of what benefit is it for a man to gain the whole world and to forfeit his soul? What really would a man give in exchange for his soul? For whoever becomes ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, the Son of Man will also be ashamed of him when he arrives in the glory of his Father with the holy angels. That's the end of Mark chapter 8. I love you, little children. Have a wonderful day. Thank you for listening and watching. I hope you enjoyed this. It's a wonderful thing to share in the Holy Scriptures by reading them and by having them read to one. And to be edified thereby. And may God bless you. May you also seek first the kingdom, that all the necessary requirements of the day be added to you each day. And may you appreciate how thoroughly Jesus knew the Scriptures himself. And as we go about our daily activities, may we always keep in mind that Jesus is a very important instructor, but he's also a friend. And he can provide us with understanding with regard to the purposes of Jehovah, his Father, and our Father. And now, it is June 8th, 2023. It's 15:19 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. And for me, it is Willie and Moppy saying bye for now.